Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Critical Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. There's certainly exciting and wonderful things on happening all around right now in the world of Scientology. And by that I mean bad things for Scientology, good things for the rest of us. There were some recent articles put up on Tony Ortega's blog, actually, that indicated some amazingly good news about from a recent ex-Sea Org member who was at a very high level and who indicated that the membership levels and whatnot in the church are actually confirmed as, you know, or more information indicating that they're actually a lot less than what we've been conservatively estimating. I have purposefully estimated over rather than under, because I think that that's, you know, a better thing to do when you're not sure about what's going on. And I've put information out that's, you know, was to the best of my ability and knowledge of the membership numbers and things like that. But apparently it's looking like it's better news than we thought as far as the dwindling membership of Scientology. And of course, they only have themselves to blame when it comes to that. Scientology is, you know, as a business, as a service organization, they do a horrible job. Their customer satisfaction rating is very low, and you know, getting new members in seems to be an activity that they've relegated to the past. In other words, they're not very interested in getting new people in these days, which is very hard to understand and very hard to get your wits around. But it happens to be the case. And they treat their current members, you know, so in such an abusive fashion that they don't stay, you know, or they don't want to stay, and they're leaving in more numbers than like I said, we had earlier suspected. So this is very, very, very good news. And so I am throwing that out there. I've also got some very interesting videos coming up in the next week or so. We'll be finishing off Shane Waitman's interview in the next 2 weeks. We've got two more installments on that. And we'll be hearing some more from some other people in the Scientology world that I think, or in the cult world, that I think will be kind of interesting for you guys. So watch out for those starting this week. So let's get on with your questions. Jonathan Mark, what is the difference between a case supervisor and a cramming officer? They both decide how a person will go up the bridge. Actually, they don't. And so I talked in my last episode about what a case supervisor is and how he was the person who actually, or she, is the person who determines when a person is done in Scientology with a particular auditing step or action and lets the person move on to the next grade or level in Scientology. That's a case supervisor's job, and I went over that in detail. A cramming officer is a whole different thing. In Division 5 of a Scientology organization, which is called the Qualifications Division, meaning that a person has to meet, you know, they're the ones who check out qualifications of a person before they can move on to their next level or whatnot. The Qualifications Division is also the corrective division of an organization. It's the part where if another part of the organization is not functioning properly or is not doing its job, that staff member who's failing or not doing his job right or erroring or whatever will go to qualifications, and he'll see a cramming officer. And qual has the job of correcting errors or outnesses in the rest of the organization. So a cramming officer is the one who actually does that. There's a section in qual called cramming, or the cramming section. And like, let's say that, you know, an auditor, a Scientology counselor, is doing his job, but he flubs, he messes up, he screws up in like, you know, in more than just a routine way. Although actually it's pretty much used for any sort of flubs. That auditor would then stop auditing and would go to cramming. And he'd actually receive a written order from the case supervisor who would write what's called a cramming order and say, hey, in this session, you, with this, you know, with PC Joe, you know, you gave him the wrong command and it distracted him from his session. And so you go to cramming and you get cleared up on why you did that. And, And so then the guy will, and it could be for any kind of error, right? It could be anything at all. Goes to cramming and he sees the cramming officer. The cramming officer sits the auditor down, puts him on a meter, asks him, about what was it that he messed up on, goes over the cramming order, and then gets any correction done on the person, usually by having the auditor reread and find what words he didn't understand in the materials that cover how to do what it was that he screwed up on, right? And in theory, this is a relatively good idea, when you have, it's a self-correcting organization in the sense that, if you have people in an organization who are not doing their job properly, qual is not them being in trouble. They're not in ethics trouble. They're not in, deep water when they go to cramming. They're supposed to go to cramming on a routine basis to get corrected and get better at their job. That's the theory of it, at least. And if it's done properly, then that's how it works out. It can be done, wrong, where the person didn't make a mistake or didn't screw up, or it can be used to punish somebody. But in theory, that's not what it's for. And cramming is usually not. I mean, I've heard of people abusing it and using it to beat people down and make them feel bad and feel wrong and all that. But that's not so much. Ethics is more in Scientology what's used for that. Cramming tends to be a good thing. And that's so the cramming officer is the one who does that, who carries out that cramming. Anyone in Scientology can write a cramming order on anybody else. It's not an ethics report. It's not like a knowledge report, or it's not like you're in trouble if you get a cram, right, or a cramming order. So theoretically, any part of the organization can see an error or something, that somebody is doing their job wrong, and write a cramming order on them so that the guy goes to cramming and the cramming officer figures out what he did wrong, why he did it wrong, and corrects that or fixes that. So that doesn't really have anything directly to do with allowing a pre-clear in Scientology to go up the bridge, go up the various levels. Cramming's not who determines that. So I think that's the difference between the two. Will John Bay. There are aspects of Scientology I still find interesting as a student of religion and philosophy. I belong to several non-church-affiliated Scientology groups, but I don't know. I'm beginning to wonder if any version of Scientology is safe, since it alters one's thinking by what seems extended hypnotic command. What do you think? I actually talk about this in my book, Scientology A to Xenu, how Dianetics and Scientology use hypnosis as part of the process or part of the procedure of Scientology. And I do think that that is the case, and I don't think that Scientology counseling is overall a productive, helpful form of therapy. I think there are certain aspects of it that could be used in a helpful fashion. I think there's some parts of Scientology that are helpful to people. I'm not saying it's all bad or it's all dark or all black, but when it comes to its counseling procedures, I don't think that they are helpful on a long-term continuing therapy kind of basis. And I would not recommend them to anyone. That is my take on it. I don't think that, now I'm talking about the procedures now. I'm not talking about the belief system of Scientology. I've said before, and I'll continue to say that I don't care what you choose to believe. Belief is only important as it manifests itself in action. And you can believe in blue Smurfs if you want. I don't care. But if you think that the Smurfs are telling you to, murder your wife, well, then we got a problem, right? So in terms of the Scientology techniques now, Scientology methods and auditing, that's something you're doing. And I think it's a destructive doingness. I think it's doing something to a person that shouldn't be done to them, right? I don't think that sitting there for hours on end doing these repetitive processes on a person are helping them in any way. And I've been, subjected to those things for hours and hours and hours. I know exactly what I'm talking about. And I definitely believe that those things are inducing hypnotic states, which a person goes into, comes out of, and then they are indoctrinated to believe that by going into and out of these hypnotic states, that they've achieved some kind of therapeutic result. And I don't think that's right. I think that's a con job. I think that's wrong to do to somebody and indoctrinate them to believe that you're helping them in some way. Even though I do think that the auditors and the pre-clears, the people who are, you know, administering the auditing and the people who are receiving it, honestly believe that what they're doing is helpful. I mean, that's not part of what I'm talking about here. I'm not saying somebody's being dishonest in this equation or that the auditor knows, you know, that he's, you know, hypnotizing his PC or something. I talk about this in my book. You know, it's not a matter of the auditor's trying to, evilly do something horrible to his pre-clears. But just because you think what you're doing is good doesn't make it good. Doesn't work that way, you know? And there's countless examples in history of that where people thought they were doing good to other people when in fact they were ruining their lives or hurting them or even killing them. So that's my take on auditing. So I, you know, to you, the person who asked me this question, who is involved in, you know, doing independent Scientology, I don't recommend independent Scientology. I don't think that's a good thing to be doing to yourself. And that's my take on it. Continuum ad infinitum continuum. You have mentioned your parents were in Scientology before you were. Did they, and or how did they, introduce Scientology to you as a child? Did they tell you it was their religion? Did they say they were on a spiritual journey? Something else. What was your impression of Scientology before you ever joined as a teenager? Well, I got involved in Scientology officially, like actually getting on board and becoming part of it when I was 15 years old. Prior to that, I'd been around Scientology since I was about 4 years old when my parents first started doing it. My dad got started first, then he got my mom in, and then she and he both did courses and auditing. They did marriage counseling. They ended up getting back together and getting remarried. And I knew that young, you know, as a young child, and I definitely thought that was a good thing. I loved my parents, and I liked seeing them together. So automatically, Scientology had made a favorable impression on me. But as a child, I did some courses. I did a communications course. I did these TRs and whatnot, but I had no idea what I was doing. They were just play, you know. They were just things to do. I was exposed to Scientology teachings a little bit, in that my parents were both staff at the Pasadena Mission, which is a lower level from an organization, from an org, right? But it was a pretty big mission. There were a lot of people there and stuff. This was in the 70s, mid-70s, late 70s. And so I was hanging around there a lot, mostly playing with other kids or just, you know, doing whatever, being bored. And sometimes I'd go into the classroom and play with the clay or, you know, that sort of thing. And a couple of times, you know, like there was a bully at school who was giving me a hard time. And one time I remember going to see the Scientology ethics officer who told me a story about L. Ron Hubbard, you know, beating up the neighborhood bullies and how Hubbard had been victorious and had made the neighborhood safe for other kids, you know. And I don't know if that's true or not. But it was a story. I was not a fighter as a kid. I was very violence adverse, you know, very conflict averse back then. And so I was not into fighting or, you know, duking it out with any bullies. So that advice kind of didn't really do much for me. But it was advice, you know. That was about the extent of my exposure to Scientology, other than all of my family's, you know, my parents' friends were all Scientologists. My parents obviously were Scientologists. So I was in this world of Scientology, and I also knew the terminology, like, you know, your reactive mind. I'd heard the term reactive mind, right? Or your bank, right? And my mother, you know, don't be banky, you know, if I was acting up, you know, it was my mind, right? It was my reactive mind. Don't, you know, put your bank away, Chris, you know, that sort of thing. And in fact, this is kind of funny. The only people up until I was about 12 years old, the only people I ever heard use the word communication were Scientologists. And I knew there were special terminology in Scientology, like bank and, you know, Thetan and things like that. And I thought communication was actually a Scientology-specific word, since the only people I ever heard use it were Scientologists, right? So it was a bit of a shock, you know, when I was 12 years old, I was like, Mom, she said communication. And my mom's like, yeah. And I was like, I thought that was a Scientology word. She just laughed, you know. When I got into high school, my first couple of years of high school, I started hearing bad things about Scientology or snide comments from other people, you know, other students, other high school students. And I didn't really know what to think about that. You know, I said in my book that I didn't really understand it and I knew they didn't either, so it didn't really bug me that much. You know, it created a little bit of an impression though, right? And I remember one time, you know, I talked with my mom about the money that they spent on Scientology. And suddenly this was, you know, like sort of a thing, right? I was like, wow, you guys are really spending a lot of money on this. And my mom's like, yeah, well, okay. And she was really cool about it, actually. She didn't get in my face or anything. She just said, look, this is, you know, your father and I do Scientology. It's something that helps us. It makes us feel better. They didn't say spiritual awareness. They never used the word religion. That wasn't really part of it. That never came up. What she said was that it was something that she found very helpful to herself, and my dad did too. And so it was their money and they were going to spend it how they wanted to. And she made the point that I never wanted for anything. I always had clothes and food and a nice place to live. And we did have a really nice house and whatnot at the time. So what was my problem? You know, it was sort of like, why are you, you know, making an issue out of this? How is this an issue for you? You know? And she said, you know, it's true that if we didn't spend that money on Scientology, we might spend it on other things. You know, we might have more money to buy you a car or whatever, right? But, you know, it's our money, so we're going to spend it the way we want. So that was kind of and I just sort of went, okay, well, I think, you know, you guys use it as a crutch or something. And she goes, well, you're right. It is a crutch, you know, but it's one we're willing to have. And I couldn't really argue with that, you know? So that was about as far as that conversation went. And then when I was 15, you know, I was kind of open to, okay, well, I don't know what it is really, you know, and I'm not sure. My parents like it, so I was kind of more open to it maybe than maybe I would have normally been. And then, you know, as I've detailed before, I went in, did the personality test, and it was game over. So that was my childhood experience with Scientology, and that's how my parents sort of dealt with me on it, right? I've seen and heard horror stories about parents using Scientology, you know, with their kids, on their kids, using it in a very abusive fashion. I didn't really experience much of that. I did have a couple instances of things that happened that my mom did that she now goes, like, recoils in horror when I told her about it, because she'd forgotten about it. You know, like, there was one time where my mom got a stick in her craw about me reading this chapter of this book, or reading this book, actually. I think it was a Hardy Boys book, you know, some fiction book, you know, some kids book, and really making sure I didn't have any misunderstood words in it, you know, and she was really going to make sure. And so, like, this entire day, it was just a hellacious day where I kept, you know, she kept asking me definitions of words in this book, and I must have been, like, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old, maybe 11. And it was just torture, because I didn't know the definition. I didn't flunk and go get a dictionary and look it up and then restudy it. And I just, oh, it was awful, awful day. That was a horrible day. And she gave up. I was crying. I was very, very upset. And she quit doing that to me that day. And that was as far as that went, right? I didn't have a lot of, you know, Scientology really shoved down my throat, except in maybe in times of stress like that. I can count on one hand how many times something like that happened. But I know other families and other kids who grew up in Scientology who had much more abusive situations, with the ethics conditions and having to write OWs and, you know, their overts and withholds, having to write up all their transgressions, their wrongdoings and things like that. You know, parents who were pretty abusive with it. So I did not have that happen to me. I guess I had good parents and I dodged that bullet. So that's what I can say about all of that. VSGL. If personnel, Sea Org members, are so scarce, why does the Church of Scientology keep people in the RPF for such a long time? The RPF is Scientology's Rehabilitation Project Force, which is basically for the Sea Organization. This is only for the Sea Organization. The staff and the regular public do not do the RPF. This is a common, too common misconception with people who are only passingly familiar with Scientology. So I want to make it clear that, you know, the RPF is Sea Org only. It is a reconditioning camp. It's to get a person who is basically what they say or describe as a person who has gone treasonous to the Sea Org, who has done, you know, horrible, awful things and must pay for them, right? Goes to the RPF. It's supposed to be a corrective action, but it is without question, one of the most gruesome forms of punishment Scientology has to offer. I've talked in a video about the Truth Rundown, which is a form of auditing and sect checking that's used. That's done on every person on the RPF. The whole point of the thing is to recondition you to take on responsibility for every bad thing that you've ever done, and it's all your fault, and it was only your fault, and it's only through your wrongdoings that you've ended up there in the first place, and you have to grovel and make good on all the bad things you did, right, in every aspect of your life, in order to cleanse yourself of those sins, really, and get yourself back into a rehabilitated state where you're fit to be a Sea Org member. That's how they talk about it, you know. They don't say sins, but the whole rehabilitated part they do. So it's a long program, and it took me 3 years to get through, which I found out was totally average time, right? While I was there, I saw how long it was taking people, had taken people, was taking people to get through it, and it was about a 3-year program. why do they keep people there for so long? Because they can, and because that's kind of how long it takes to break a person down mentally and spiritually, you know, emotionally, however, whatever word you want to use for in here to sort of get through to them how bad and horrible and evil and wrong they've been, and how they need to themselves take on the burden of guilt for all of that, and then make reparations for it, right? That's the whole mind thing that's going on the RPF. I'm gonna probably, you know, write a whole book about this, or at least put a lot of my experience with this into my next book, as well as, you know, talk about maybe some other human rights abuses that the Church of Scientology engages in. Because this whole thing is just one big, huge human rights abuse. They deny you travel, freedom of movement, freedom of speech, freedom of thought. I mean, all of that is just goes by the wayside when you go to the RPF. And you are under 24/7 surveillance. You have to run everywhere. I mean, it's a very gruesome thing. So it's long because it has to be long to get through to the people who are on it, that, you know, to break them down that way and then build them back up and mold them in such a way that the C organization is all and they are nothing, right? That Scientology is the only thing in the entire universe that's any good, and they are lucky to be part of it and to contribute their life and every part of their life to it. And that's what happens in that group, right? In the RPF and in the Sea Org. So that's about the most, I don't know, you know, brutally honest answer I can give you in a short format answer show like this. So that's, there you go. It's time for Flash Answers. Linda Clement. Noticing the artwork behind you, I have to ask, who are your favorite sci-fi authors? We already know your least favorite. I like the classics, you know. I like Arthur C. Clarke. I like Ray Bradbury. I like Isaac Asimov, You know, those old classic, sci-fi stories are just wonderful to me. I'm not really a huge sci-fi fan as much as I am a fantasy fan. You know, I was a big Dungeons and Dragons player when I was a kid. I love fantasy stuff. So I really like that genre more than I do sci-fi. But movies wise, I'm huge sci-fi fan, right? Martian, Star Wars, Star Trek. Huge fan of those things. Don't read the books so much on those, I mean, I read the Star Wars books, but not big on reading sci-fi as much as I am on watching it, There's a TV show that was on sci-fi recently called The Expanse, which I thought was probably one of the best sci-fi shows I've ever seen. So that's kind of my sci-fi thing. Egg Chen Six Demon Bag. What was one or a few of the things you wanted to do when you left Scientology that you could not do when you were in there? Or what did you find out about the real world that exploded your mind after you left? Going to see movies whenever the hell I want to. That was a huge thing for me. Love being able to do that now. I can go see a movie in the middle of the afternoon if I want to. Ha ha! No big, right? Also, eating whatever I want to, whenever I want to. Huge. Love doing that, right? Because I'm a snacker, man. I love my snacks. And as far as anything in the real world that exploded my mind, I think it was really, reevaluating my Scientology beliefs, and finding out psychiatry wasn't all bad, things like that kind of exploded my mind a bit. That there were, but I think that actually the biggest thing was finding out how cool most people are and how nice they are, really. I mean, the world's full of, there's definitely some bad people in the world, no question about it. But it was a real mind-blowing thing for me to really get how amazingly cool most people are. That was big. J. Maz Lewowicz won. On the ship, LRH surrounded himself with a cadre of teenage girls who fed him, clothed him, bathed him, lit his cigarettes, carried his messages, and essentially did his bidding. Are there any reports or proof that there was sexual activity between LRH and this cater? Given his involvement with the sex magic movement, I wouldn't be surprised. Just typing this question made me feel gross. I need a hot shower. Actually, surprisingly, no. There were no stories I'm aware of or have ever seen or heard of LRH doing anything sexual to his messengers, to these little girls and boys who were running around the ship helping him out. And they went from, little kids to teenagers in age, right? And no, there was never any hint I ever heard of that he in any way was sexually inappropriate with his messengers. David Jordan. Chris, I'm a big fan. My question is, has anyone joined Scientology to try to infiltrate deeper into the organization? I know that in the 70s, Scientology infiltrated the IRS as part of Operation Snow White, but has anyone ever done the same type of thing into Scientology, perhaps to get some tangible evidence that COB is really abusing people? There's one person I know who infiltrated the PAC base in Los Angeles with some recording equipment. She went in there, recorded some staff meetings and some goings-ons, and came out with some documents and whatnot. She got caught pretty quickly, and it was a very, very foolish thing to do. I do not support it in any way. Didn't know it was happening when it did happen. And I just don't think that that's a sound strategy for any individual to get in there and do, right? Because in order to get anywhere close to David Miscavige, you're going to have to be in the Sea Org for, at least a year or two. And then, then what? I mean, there's just so many hoops you have to jump through, so many things you'd have to do, and give up your, whole life. Literally, because the only way you're going to get access like that is by joining the Sea Organization, right? So why would anybody do something like that? That's just cray cray, right? Just don't even think about it. And also not necessary. Scientology is imploding all on its own. Okay, and with that, we have reached the end of another episode of Critical Q&A. If you have any questions, feedback, or comments, go ahead and leave them in the comment section of these videos, and I will definitely see them and get to your questions as quickly as I can. Thank you very much for watching. See you next week.